That is Tosafot Hanukkah. That is
Isru Hanukkah.
So essentially, we started talking off. What we really discussed basically overall were three sugyas that interlocked, that they're presented together in the Gemara as joined, as interconnected, because the Gemara raised the question about what kinds of oils could you use for Hanukkah lights. That the Mishnayos that we all know from Friday Night Davening, the Mishnayos tell us that we have to use only certain types of oil and candles and wicks for Friday night candles. So the Gemara wants to know, do we also have such a standard for Hanukkah candles? And the Gemara presents it, itself an interesting thing, as if it's two separate questions, one regarding weekday Hanukkah, and one regarding Friday night Hanukkah. So the Gemara depends, hangs those issues on two other questions. One is, do we say that Kavsa zakakwa or kavsa lo zakakwa? If the candles go out, are you obligated to relight them or are you not obligated to relight them? And the assumption is that that's going to affect the question of whether you can use shvach candles. Because if you use shvach candles that are likely to go out, and if you're obligated to relight them, you're going to have a problem. Rashi phrases the concern in an interesting way. We'll come back to that, but that's the gist of the issue. And then the Gemara assumes, for some reason, which is also an interesting question, that Friday night is a whole different issue. That Friday night, it depends on whether or not you can use the Hanukkah candles for personal benefit. If you're allowed to use the Hanukkah candles for personal benefit, then you have to make sure they're strong and stark. Because we'll be worried that maybe you will tilt them if they're not so strong and you'll do a malacha. So because the conclusion is kavsa lo zakakwa, that's a kula, and aser l'hishtamish la'ora, that's a chumra, it comes out that in both cases you can use shvach oil. You can use shvach oil during the week because you're not obligated to relight it, and you can use shvach oil Friday night because you can't use them anyway, so we're not worried that you're going to tilt them. And then the Gemara brings in a third sugya, which we'll come back to later, time permitting, about the question of how does that affect the shear of shemen. Basically, those three sugyas are all intertwined, they're all presented together in the Gemara, Kavsa Zakakwa, Isser L'Hishtamish La'ora, and the shear of shemen. So let's focus a little bit on this question of Kavsa Zakakwa. So on the surface, it would seem like we could understand what the Machlokas is about. Seems like it's a pretty straightforward one that we could ask, what is the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? Is the mitzvah to light it, or is the mitzvah to have candles lit? So it would seem like if the mitzvah is simply to light it, then we could say, call solos off as well. If they go out, you don't have to relight them. But if the mitzvah is to have candles lit, that's where you get to the position that you have to relight them if they go out. And indeed, there are many, both within this classroom and earlier, who took that approach and assumed that that was the issue. It's certainly a very intuitive approach to take. We noted that the Shulchan Aruch has a phrasing which requires a little clarification. The Shulchan Aruch says, Kavsa lo zakakwa, because havlaka osa mitzvah. So that phrasing is a little bit confusing because it invokes a different machlokas in the Gemara. The Gemara later on has a machlokas using that language. Do we say hadlaka osa mitzvah, or do we say hanacha osa mitzvah? Is the mitzvah performed by the lighting, and therefore you have to light in the proper place by a person who's obligated? Or do we say no, hanacha osa mitzvah, and therefore even if the candles were lit somewhere else, and by somebody who's not obligated, they could be moved to a proper place by somebody who is obligated, and that would be the mitzvah. So the usage of that phrase here is a little confusing. And the Taz asks about it, and this alumdish approach one could take to that whole mixing of the sugyas, but the simplest is that the Shulchan Aruch is not really addressing that machlokas here. The Shulchan Aruch is saying that whatever the verb is, whether the verb is hadlaka or hanacha, but the mitzvah is in the verb, and what happens afterwards is a secondary consideration. So that seems like a reasonable way to address the issue. Right? To say that that's our question. Is the mitzvah the act of lighting, or is the mitzvah having candles lit? But, as reasonable as that is, we saw that the sukkah is a little bit more complicated. And that we could actually break it down into many, many different nuanced ways to see what's going on. And we noted, first of all, a couple of interesting disputes. So one question is, should this apply to Friday afternoon? So the Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Maharshal, that this applies even Friday afternoon. Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Trumas Hadash, that this applies, that's Trumas Hadash, not the Maharshal, that this applies even Friday afternoon. Meaning that even if you lit the candles before Hanukkah starts, as we do Friday afternoon, and they go out then, you're still not obligated to relight them. And the Taz says that's too much. I can't believe that that's true, because it's one thing to say that a second of the mitzvah is enough, but before the mitzvah even gets started, that's going too far. So again, it seems like the Shulchan Aruch is taking this same position to a further extreme and saying that it's just the lighting that's the mitzvah, and even lighting before the zman of the mitzvah could be enough. And the Taz says that's too far. I could hear that just lighting could be enough, but to have to at least be doing it at least a second in the time of the mitzvah, and that can't all be before the time of the mitzvah. So our assumption that it depends on the question of whether it's the lighting or the having it lit that's the mitzvah is a little bit challenged on both sides. Because first of all, the position that says that you don't have to relight it doesn't seem to be so absolute. First of all, everyone seems to agree that it's appropriate to relight it. That at least it's a hinder to relight. So if you're standing there and the candles go out, you certainly should relight them. Without a bracha, but it's certainly the proper thing to do. And we noted also that the Rush maintains that we make a bracha of Bahadlik there because the mitzvah continues. And the Korban Asano asks, what do you mean the mitzvah continues? Kofsel Ozabikla, if it goes out after that first second, you're not obligated to relight it. So the Achronim explained that clearly there is a key of mitzvah that's going on after that first second. And that could also explain why it's possible you could even make the bracha then, even after you initially lit it, because there is a key of mitzvah that's still continuing. So it doesn't seem like the whole mitzvah is in that initial light.
Question?
Yes, sir.
The Rush says you break a bracha when you relight it?
No, you don't break a bracha when you relight it, but that the reason the nusach of the bracha is one that connotes the mitzvah is continuing is subject to question, because you could say, well, what do you mean? How is the mitzvah continuing? Isn't the whole mitzvah in the first second? So no, it's not in the first second. Even though we have this separate concept, you're not obligated to relight it, but clearly there is a continuing mitzvah as long as it's lit.
Is the exact text of the bracha, should that be a raya to one way or another? Meaning, the bracha was kind of made by Chazal at a certain point in history, and you know they may have not been considering all the lungs of the mitzvah at that point.
Wow, that's quite a radical position to take.
Right. So
yes, so you know, we normally like to hope for a little bit more conceptual integrity, but whether or not that's conceivably true, I mean, clearly there are differences in Nusach and in Girsa, which maybe don't correlate to all the different shittas. That's for sure true, but here the focus is not so much on the Nusach of the Bracha being a Raya, but on the way Rishonim explained the Nusach of the Bracha as being a Raya. How can the Rush say this if we have a rule of Kapsa Mozakukwa? So that shows us that, yeah, it's still going on, even though you wouldn't be obligated to relight it had it gone out. And in that sense, it's comparable to Tzitzis or Tzolin, where we say that you make the bracha before, you don them, but, I think it's the only thing people don nowadays, but even after that, once you're still wearing them, you can still make the bracha, perhaps with a little bit of adjustment, because the mitzvah still continues beyond that initial donatude. Okay, so we also saw that, to further complicate matters, that the position of kafsa lozopikul is not so absolute, because there may be times when you are not only encouraged, but also obligated to relight. So what would that be? Let's say, for example, you extinguish it. You extinguish it on purpose, you extinguish it not on purpose. How does that make a difference? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the view of the Rashba, that if you are trying to fix the candle, and b'shogeg you extinguish it, so then you're not obligated to relight. So that is a little bit subject to dispute in both directions. Because on the one hand, you have the view of the Maharshal that says you are obligated to relight if you extinguish it, even b'shogeg. So that point is subject to machlokes. And the implication of this statement is that if you extinguish it b'mezid, then you do have to relight. So that's Shulchan Aruch, the Rashba, the Shulchan Aruch is subject to argument from both directions. Happens to be that whether or not he really means to imply that b'mezid is different, that's itself a machlokes. Some of the notes that came from Shulchan Aruch come to that conclusion. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in his Shuvas does not come to that conclusion and says, even if you extinguish it b'mezid, you're still not obligated to relight it, but with an important distinction we'll come back to in a minute. So how does this affect the lumbus of the whole issue? And why should it matter if you're not obligated to relight it? Why should it matter if you yourself are the one who put it out? So again, it could be that maybe it doesn't matter, that's the view of Shlomo Zalman takes. But why should it matter at all, according to others? So we noted that the Kadjuk Lavarav, who was a student of the Abnezer, and always tends to have a very broad view of Torah and how all the different dinim fit into each other. So he seems to see this in a kind of a Kol Torah Kula kind of context.
Morty?
Kadjuk Lavarav, if I had a magic marker here.
I just put a bunch
of things.
Oh, okay. Yeah, truth is, what if you think both Hebrew and English, it's not very easy to spell.
Kadjuk Lavar.
The rabbi says.
Is that a Q?
That a Q. Might as well be. Those are G's. Maybe G's for the chichiks. Even in Hebrew, it's not so easy. It's not so easy, but in any event. Okay.
Coving lover.
Coke lover.
Coving lover.
Yeah, that's I just put a bunch of letters together. Really
the Shuvas Eretz Tzvi is the name of the sefer. Tzvi Hirsch Frimmer of Kozhikov.
Oh, his picture is upstairs on the 5A.
That's right. Very good. Feel free just to say that without remembering the name. 5A is a lot easier to spell.
Yeah. Rabbi on fifth floor.
Yes.
Not Rabbi Simon.
Well, he's on 5 because he's on 5A. But if you don't remember the name, you can go to 5 and ask Rabbi Simon and he'll tell you about the Kadji Glover. But in any event, so the Kadji Glover, this is a stylistic point that the Avinezer was his Rebbe. The Avinezer is well known for having a holistic view of Torah that this kind of core conceptual similarities or shared conceptual foundations of completely disparate sugyas and shas. And his students, such as the Kadjiglover, were known for taking that idea even farther. So this is an example of that. That the Kadjiglover discusses, let's say, for example, somebody fulfills the mitzvah of Kisei Hadam. Somebody shechts an animal, covers the blood with dirt, but then the wind comes. This is something the Gemara talks about. The wind comes and blows away the dirt. Or let's say somebody has a bris milah. And The circumstances are that the impact of the bris milah gets undone. So in addressing both of those scenarios, Chajah Glover writes that you're not obligated, you're not responsible, rather, for what happens afterwards, for the fact that the blood has become uncovered or the milah has become undone. And the way he characterizes that status is kavsa lo zakukla. In other words, using our phrase from Hilchos Chanukah and transferring it over there. So an example, again, of seeing very different sugyas through one lens, but basically saying that that's the concept here, that you do your part, and even when the mitzvah is an effect-oriented mitzvah, like having blood covered or having a state of circumcision, and even if that effect gets undone, still that's the policy kavsa lo zakukla. It's not your responsibility. And the premise seems to be assuming that you're not the one who uncovers it. You're not the one who undoes it. Because, for example, in the context of milah, that's what the Kajah Glover was talking about. That on the one hand, the Gemara says that somebody whose milah became undone is allowed to eat truma. On the other hand, the Gemara says that a moshech or lasso, somebody who tries to undo the result of the milah, is considered to be a tremendous avarian. So he says, what's the difference? The difference is, do you do it on purpose or did it just happen? If you did it on purpose, that's a tremendous avarian. But if it just happens, so then you're still considered to be a nimo. So we use this language of kafsa lo zakukla, basically suggesting it's all the same idea. And his Rabbi the Avnei Nezer in Tshuva has a similar approach, in which he says the machlokes between the Maharshal and the Rashba. And if the Maharshal says, if you put the candles out yourself, you're always obligated to relight it. And the Rashba, the Shulchan Aruch quote, says, if they go out b'shogeg through your hands, you don't have to relight it. So the Avnei Nezer writes, they both agree with this basic principle that you do your part, and you're not responsible for what happens afterwards, as long as you're not the one who does it yourself. But within that, there's a machlokas. The Maharshal says, if you're the one who does it yourself, it's a problem whether it was intentional or not. And the Rashba will say it's only a problem if you intentionally undermine your initial act. But if you yourself undermine your initial action unintentionally, you're still not responsible. Okay, so far so good. So Rav Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva where he discusses a added issue, which really combines this with another one of the three sugyas that we saw at that opening section of the Gemara and Shabbos. What happens if, we know the Gemara is ultimately going to say that you have a shear, or at least sounds like it might say, maybe it's machlokas, but that you have to have a minimal amount of oil in the menorah, or a minimal amount of candle lamp. Has to have the potential to last a half hour. If it doesn't actually last a half hour, okay, so we see you're not obligated to relight. But it has to have been possible when you did it. If it never had a shot in life, that's a problem. So we know that's true then if you don't put enough oil or candles inside. But what if you do put enough oil, but the wind is such that it's not going to last? Practically speaking, this very long candle or this generous amount of oil is not going to suffice, because the wind will instantly blow it out. So then many assume that's the same thing as not having oil in the first place. That's called never having a shot in life. And that's also noted. Then we discussed, parenthetically, so there was a question, let's say in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, it's popular to light outside and to put a glass box over it if it's windy. So some say, well, maybe that's not going to help, because even if the wind will ultimately be stopped by the glass, but when you light it, it's not under glass. So that moment that you light it, it's not viable. You're going to do something in a minute to make it viable. But maybe that's similar to what's described in the Shulchan Aruch regarding oil. That if somebody lights with an insufficient amount, and then later on adds the oil, so now it will last, says the Shulchan Aruch, that's no good. So some want to say this will also be no good. And we suggested ultimately that maybe they're not so comparable based on details of that sugya. I think Morty was up first, then Daniel and then David, I think that one.
Even within that, let's say they like theoretically would be comparable.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, you like use a Zariah, the fact that like they can, essentially when they used the light outside, they would have also had to be concerned, meaning in times of the Gemara, they probably would have had to be concerned with that problem.
You're saying wind is not a new phenomenon.
Yeah. And the fact that they always lit outside, or up until a certain point, they lit outside.
So, right, so it must have been someday that they must have had some way of dealing with the fact that wind was always around and they were lighting outside those days.
Right.
So maybe they must have had some kind of system then also, and presumably that was also like this, so maybe that's proof that that's okay.
Could you be. Mean, like, is it used as, like, right, like, Mark doesn't mention any, like, special...
Yeah, I think it's a good question why we don't find discussion about that, because, right, it seems like if that was the concern and there was no way to deal with it, then we would have had large periods of time when it would have been functionally impossible to light the menorahs. That's a definitely an interesting point. Daniel?
So I just want to understand it conceptually. So the problem is that whether we light it outside, the fact that there's a box blocking it, and there's the same problem that it's going to go out?
Not exactly. The problem is that the wind is a problem.
Right.
Right? That if you know it's going to go out, so then maybe we should say that's like not having enough oil.
So even what...
So now let's take one step at a time. So let's say that's true. Okay, let's say lighting it outside in the wind is a problem. So the question is, but I'm going to put a glass box around it. So doesn't that solve the problem? So you would think that it should solve the problem. However, if you really want to be machmir about it, you might say that no, it doesn't help, because you don't put the glass box on until after you light it. And in that situation, maybe that's comparable to what the Shulchan Aruch describes if we're comparing it to not enough oil. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch that if you light with insufficient oil, and then afterwards you add oil, that's no good. So maybe that's like lighting with wind, and only afterwards correcting for the wind. So that's the Chumrah that some want to suggest. We eventually discussed why we're not so sure that's such a problem, because we think there's basically two ways to make the comparison. Either it's a din in the hadlaka, that would mean specifically it's about really the oil, or it's a din in the actual viability of the candle, in which case ultimately the candle is viable even if you have to do some steps in order to make that happen.
So the problem also, the thing of it being windy, is not such a big deal, or it is?
So it is a problem if you're not going to be able to protect for it.
With the box?
Yeah, if it's so windy that it's going to go out and there's nothing you can do about it, then that would seem to be a problem. You could make a lumdisha case that it's not a problem. You could say that the whole idea of having a shear of oil, especially together with the concept of kavsala zakukla, is that it's not really about what's going to happen. It's that it's not ready to light with less oil.
Right.
So therefore, one could make a conceptual case that the wind is something completely else.
Right.
So conceptually, there's room to argue, but this is the concern that posts to me. David?
Okay, so you're saying people don't like the glass box. Why? I mean, what you say, there's a comparison to Shulchan Aruch? What is the comparison?
The comparison would be, and again, we're not necessarily endorsing this, but the glass box, the problem isn't the glass box itself, the problem is that it's added afterwards.
Yeah.
That if the wind is a problem, so the question is, can you solve that problem by putting the glass box on a minute later? Since it says in the Shulchan Aruch that when you light, you have to have enough oil. And it also says there that it doesn't help if you light with insufficient oil, and then you add oil later. So maybe this is like adding the box later, is like adding the oil later. Again, we're not sure the comparison is so compelling, but that's a concern.
And that's opposed to the rays.
So the wind is, once this is, it's interesting just to trace along this, and I'll take Shaw's question in a second. Now recognize that we're talking about three distinct stages, right? Insufficient oil, that's one issue, right? And that seems like it comes from the Gemara. Although the Gemara is machlokas, so there's still ayam mazal, a little machlokas if there is such a din. But it's widely assumed that there is such a din of not having insufficient oil. That's level one. So now we just mentioned extending that to another level and saying maybe you'll have enough oil, but an external circumstance, like the wind, that's also a problem. Right? So that's a chiddush, right? Because you could have said oil by itself is enough. That means your havlaka was appropriate. Who cares if the wind's going to come and blow it out? That's something else. But this is an extension to say that, no, an external circumstance is also a problem. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman is going to add a third level onto that, which others have as well, but we're mentioning Rav Shlomo Zalman, and we'll mention a second thing. Shmuley had a question.
I'm going to ask on the Kohen Gadol.
Okay, so we'll come back to that. So, his third level was beyond the Chiddush al Gabe Chiddush, right? Once you say that external circumstances are a problem, what if the external circumstances are not at all physical realities, but are just your intent? Right? Let's say you intend you have a golf game to go to in the middle of the night, so you decide that you can't wait the half hour in your house, so after 5 minutes you're going to blow them out. So he extends, again, these concepts to say that's also considered not having a shot point. Because that candle never had a chance. Yes, sir?
If you love insufficient oil, isn't that the same as not having the intent?
Maybe, but usually that's all you have. Especially without Hanukkah, you're trying to will your Hanukkah miracle into place. You hope it'll last, but that's all you have. But here, you know, this could be inclusive of this, that's fine. Right? But just here, let's say you only have intent. Right? Let's say you have. It's not a problem going in this direction. This, for sure, we know is an issue. But we've now built two levels on top of that. That, let's say, it's not any other external circumstance that's going to come. And if you decide to leave it there, you could happily let it burn for an hour, no problem. But you know that you're going to come and undo it. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that's also a problem. Even though, if you recall, from a few minutes ago, Rav Shlomo Zalman was the same one who was relatively makel, and said that if you yourself purposely extinguish the candles, we still say kosa and it was akrikwa. So why has he changed his position here? Really, because it's coming from a different din. It's not coming from the din of kosa zakrik or lo zakrikwa. It's coming from the din of shir shaman. Okay, so yes, it's true kosa and it was akrikwa. But here, this never had enough oil. That's the problem. So we mentioned also on top of this the other fascinating sugya, right? The airplane sugya. So if you're flying somewhere, right? So you're flying all night.
So you're in a whale.
And you're in a whale, right? That's flying all night with propellers. So the question is, if you're going to be flying all night, what should you do about light? So this is a whole sugya by itself. We can go into all the different angles of it. But one thing that we definitely say you should not do is light a candle on an airplane. Okay, so why should you not light a candle on an airplane?
It's a federal crime.
It's a federal crime. That's reason one. Right? Reason two is it's very dangerous. And Rav Asher Weiss has an essay about this where he emphasizes that point, talks about helpful sakana a little bit.
Student math.
Sorry?
Student
do not do it in the laboratory. that's how get you in worse trouble. And it'll be, and there's no side here, you don't say that it's in LA. Not the candles in an airplane bathroom. That's the key of totally nothing. So, essentially, in addition to has like a little short of a contract. This is not meant to imply there aren't many other issues, but in addition to all other issues possibly involved, so as Russia Weiss points out, it's a problem of either two or three. Right? Because you know these candles are not going to last a half hour. Either the stewardess is going to come and extinguish them herself, or she's going to extinguish you, or Homeland Security will extinguish you, or they will force you to extinguish it. So whether you want to say it's like category three, that you don't even intend for it to last because you know that's going to be the circumstance, or it's like category two, because even if you hold stark and make this massive Kiddush Hashem, no, I'm not going to extinguish it under any circumstances, and as you're hauled away for life, you explain how old you are. Use note sarcasm in notes. So it's going to get blown out anyway, so that should at least be in category two.
What was two again?
Category two is that external circumstances are going to, this is like wind. In the same way, a candle can't last in the wind, so a candle's not going to last a half hour on an airplane. One of the circumstances is going to intervene. Maybe all of your fellow passengers will tackle you and then blow out your candle. Whatever it is, the candle's not lasting a half hour. Yes.
I was going to ask him, so he trusts the ratings out there, he's shown him that RU, whether or not you have to relight, that wouldn't really reconcile the opinions in the Gemara. The Gemara has one straight line of whether or not.
Yeah, this might focus on a different level. And it's actually the Abinazer, I think, if you can get who's dealing with that. But it was a similar logic to the Dutch Love, which is part of the Abinazer. But they were dealing with a machlokas within Kaf Sazakukla. That as machloks are shown within that position, that even if normally you don't have to relight, but the Rashba says that even if you extinguish it yourself, the shogeg, you still don't have to relight. And the Marashal said, if you extinguish it yourself, you always have to relight, whether it's shogeg or mezid, whatever it is. Morning?
Does it matter that when Shlomo Zalman was speaking, you were saying unintent, you were saying that you're intending to extinguish it?
Yeah.
Or this case might be that theoretically, you're planning on like hoarding over it to like make sure that no one else touches it.
Right.
So
that's why
at the end of the day, like it might be that someone does extinguish it, but you never had that intent when you.
Which is why it's more likely to be in category two. But theoretically, you could also say it's category three because this person who knows he's not going to get away with it. So when most people are not going to be the sarcastic Kiddush Hashem person we were talking about a few minutes ago, most people presumably, when the federal marshal shows up with a badge and says, put that out, they're going to put it out, and they know that's going to happen. So they are basically, essentially, willingly, you know, whether they are happy about it or not, they intend to pull it out. Hi.
Chef Shonzan, Lackman is in case of insufficient oil.
So it's comparable. It's comparable. Intent to extinguish is comparable to insufficient oil. The insufficient oil is not just about oil. It's about saying that it has to have a shot. And if you know that it doesn't have a shot, whether because it doesn't have enough oil, or because of the wind, or because Kiddush Shri, because you plan on doing it, all of that's going to be a problem. Yes, sir?
If we were to put it another way, insufficient oil is on the Chavtza, and intent is on the Gavra.
Right, which is also interesting. Insufficient oil might be on the Chavtza, which is why I wasn't sure whether the wind was a perfect comparison. Right? Because one could say, maybe the wind shouldn't matter, maybe the whole idea, what it gets into the other sugya, which we're kind of like mixing in, but it needs to be mixed in a little bit. Why is there a shear? Now, if you say that there is a halacha of a shear, so is the halacha of a shear because we need the oil to last a certain amount of time? Or no, maybe it's not about that. It's just about the maisa ha-mitzvah is not significant if it doesn't contain at least some token amount of oil. That we have, like many other mitzvahs in Torah, we have a shear for chashivas purposes. So a hadlaka with a drop of oil that's going to flicker out as soon as you do it, that's not called a hadlaka. So one could perhaps say with that, okay, so a hadlaka, even in the wind, is still called a hadlaka, even if other circumstances are going to interfere a minute from now. Now, parenthetically, just to take this opportunity to chaz at that point, when we talked about that question, we mentioned various nafkaminas of that, including the question of whether you would apply ketute michdas shiure to Yeah, Hanukkah. Would you say that you can use oil that is on death row? Because it sounds like to Yerushalmi that you can. So some ask, normally you can't use death sentence items for mitzvos. You can't use a lulav shel hashera, so why should you be able to use shemen shreifa? So that could tie into the question of, well, why is it that you need a shear of oil in the first place? Is it there for chashivas purposes? In which case, maybe you should indeed have such a rule that anything on death row is not chashiv. Or maybe it's simply for mitzias purposes. You just need to have the oil going for that amount of time. It just needs to cover ground. And therefore, it's not really dependent on any such fact. Okay, so far so good? Are we following? Okay, so all of this is on one side of the equation. So we mentioned the position of kafsa lo zakutva is not so absolute, because we find certain exceptions, and that everyone also agrees that it's certainly better to rely on the pasuk. Now, kafsa eino zakutva is also not so absolute. The kafsa zakutva, rather, the kafsa zakutva is also not absolute. The position of the Gemara that says that you have to rely on it if it goes out. Which we initially said, the machlokus could be that that position maintains that you're simply not yotze if it doesn't last the requisite amount of time. So therefore, you have to relight it. So we noted that it doesn't fit absolutely either, because there are at least two points to note regarding that. One is, some of the Rishonim ask, why does the Gemara have to have two different reasons for the weekday and for Shabbos? Why don't we say that a kafsa zakutva would be enough reason not to use it Friday night also? All the more so, because Friday night, if it goes out, you won't be able to do anything about it. So that for sure should be a problem. So why do we need a different reason for Friday night? That should be enough of a reason. So the Ramban suggests that maybe there's a difference, that maybe Friday night, everyone would agree you don't have to relight. So how does that make sense conceptually? Friday night, the mitzvah is totally different than it is on a different night? Does that make sense? So perhaps you could say that no, really the mitzvah is the same every day of Hanukkah. That you can fulfill the mitzvah without relighting it according to everybody. But the position of kafsa zakutva means that even though you fulfill the mitzvah, we have a separate mechayiv that you're still obligated to relight it. And Friday night, when it's impossible, so fine, you won't have that obligation. You follow?
We're done.
That maybe this position, the opinion, but don't follow in the Gemara, of kafsa zakutva, the opinion that says you must relight. Right? So we initially said maybe that position means you're not yotze Chanukah candles unless they last the whole time. But it's not necessarily the case, because that same position seems to hold that Friday night, when it's impossible to relight them, you are okay. So how could that be? Friday night you're yotze just with lighting it for a second, and every other night not? It's unlikely. So probably it's true every night. Probably every night of Hanukkah, even that position agrees, you're yotze with the first second. But that position says, despite the fact that you were yotze, we still obligate you to relight. And that could also explain a strange formulation of Rashi in the Sukkah. Because when Rashi explains the issue of kafsa zakutva, Rashi says, yeah, you have to relight it, and we're afraid you'll be posheya, you'll be negligent, and you won't relight it. So, why does he bring up negligence?
Maybe you'll forget. Maybe you'll get kidnapped. Whatever it is, maybe you'll have a good excuse. But the mice, you won't do it.
So it sounds like what Rashi is getting at is that if you have a good excuse, if it's an honest, that won't talk and be a problem. We're only worried about Shia because relighting it isn't fundamental to the mitzvah. It's a separate obligation.
So basically what this shows us, to sum up, we saw that there's many, many different ways to understand this question, to understand this machlokas. Right? It could be that this is a machlokas about whether the mitzvah is in the lighting or the mitzvah is having it lit. That itself could be a kol haTorah kulo machlokas, like the Kodesh Lover of Yabinezer, or it could be specifically a chanecha machlokas. Or it could be on the other side that everyone agrees that you're yotze with just the first minute. And the only question is there only a hidrut related, or is there actually a chiyuv? And why might you say not? Maybe you'll say because the potential is enough, because the whole din is to light the koach. Now we mentioned al piderach hashkafa that the idea of chafsa lo zalkakla appeals to us a little bit hashkafically, because you could say that's the whole nes of Hanukkah, that we do our part and then the rest was the other kodesh baruch hu, and that's basically what happened with the initial pach hashemen. We did everything we could, and whatever happened afterwards, that's a part of the nes. Okay, so that's most of that first sugya. So we also talked about the Yisrael Heshtamish La'ara, and we also talked about the Shir of Shemen, and we also talked about the Bracha and the implications of the role of the Bracha together with Shachianu and Shasa Nisim, and also how that carries over to Hanir Salal. But those were all a little bit more recent. So maybe we'll just do that for question form. Anyone have any questions about any of those last 3 points? Those last sugyas, more recent sugyas? Okay, so everyone's pretty comfortable with the Hanukkah Madura putting on top of that? Okay, so then Adkan Hanukkah, 2 days after it's over. So again, what we'll do is, so tomorrow we'll do Parsha. And then Sunday we'll go full steam ahead, and just we said Bezdin of 1, Bezdin of 3, Shluchu Sayu, and Makos were the priorities, if I remember correctly. Right? So we'll start with those on Sunday. All right, who wants to daven for us?
All right. I'll have some things on Thursday.